call the next case, please.
Case number 09-1029, PNGTS Shippers Group et al. Petitioners versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Rudolph for petitioners, Mr. Soper for respondent.
Mr. Rudolph, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm John Rudolph, appearing on behalf of the petitioners, the PNGTS Shippers Group. I'd ask leave to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This case presents the question of whether the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission can approve a substantial reduction in natural gas pipeline transportation capacity, operated in interstate commerce for 8 years pursuant to a Natural Gas Act certificate, without complying with the abandonment requirements of Section 7B of that statute or the Commission's regulations thereunder. In the underlying proceedings, the Commission granted a petition for declaratory order filed by Portland Natural Gas Transmission System, or PNGTS, and that action was much more than simply an arithmetic determination of pipeline capacity based on engineering calculations, as the Commission suggests, for it had two direct consequences that the Commission did not acknowledge or deal with and which establish error requiring vacation. First, it determined the extent of PNGTS's obligation to offer transportation service to the public because under FERC regulations, that obligation is defined by pipeline capacity. In so doing, it relieved PNGTS of the obligation to continue offering 20% of the transportation service that it had historically been providing the interstate market.
How do you respond to interveners' brief?
Which point, Your Honor?
Point that as of the 1997 order, the pipeline had basically open-ended abandonment authority, and that it was authorized to proceed just as it's proceeded here and to seek a declaratory order from the Commission.
That citation is to Part 284, pre-granted abandonment authority for individual customer arrangements, and the Commission allows a pipeline within the parameters of the certificated capacity and service it's been authorized to render to the interstate market, allows a pipeline to initiate service and terminate service or abandon service to the individual customer. But within those parameters, it does not address the provision or the abandonment of overall service to the interstate market.
And do you draw any distinction between abandonment of service and abandonment of facilities in terms of the statutory provision?
I do, Your Honor. Now, this case does not involve abandonment of facilities.
That's part of intervener's argument.
It does, however, involve abandonment of interstate of service to the interstate market. And this is one of the points that I wanted to make, is that prior to the issuance, let me go back for a second. An abandonment occurs whenever there's a reduction in overall service to the interstate market. Prior to the issuance of the underlying orders, PNGTS had contracts committing it to provide 210,000 MCF per day of firm, uninterruptible interstate transportation service for terms as long as 20 years. And as a result of the underlying orders, PNGTS is now offering 168,000 MCF per day of interstate service. And moreover, the Commission itself deems a pipeline capacity reduction to constitute an abandonment within the meaning of Section 7B, and that view is confirmed in an order that is cited in the briefs of every party to this review proceeding, the order approving the Maritimes and Northeast Pipeline and PNGTS Phase 4 Joint Facility Settlement Agreement that appears at 118 FERC paragraph 61-193. Because in paragraphs 7 and 8 of that order, the Commission makes clear that any future transfers of joint facility capacity that may occur as between Maritimes and PNGTS will require the transferring pipeline to obtain abandonment authority. In other words, in the Commission's view, a reduction in pipeline capacity, in that case by transfer, constitutes an abandonment within the meaning of Section 7B. Now, Section 7B prohibits the abandonment of any service rendered by facilities subject to the jurisdiction of the Commission without Commission approval based on a finding that the public convenience and necessity permit abandonment. And as this Court has determined, to satisfy that standard, the Commission must consider all factors relevant to whether the public interest is in any way disturbed by the grant of abandonment authority. And that's...
The commission says it considered the relevant factors, and furthermore, the economic impact on shippers, you can raise all those issues at the during the rate proceeding.
Two points there, Your Honor. The commission...
So your clients are in no way harmed by the order that's outstanding.
Okay, well, actually, there are three points there. Let me try to take them. In terms of raising the issue in the rate case, in fact, let me take your latter point first. The impact on the shippers is on the assurance of rate stability that is provided by the at-risk condition. That was a condition that was imposed for the protection of shippers, not...
They have their rates that are protected by that provision now. Now there's going to be a rate proceeding where you or, you know, persons on behalf of your clients can raise these issues.
No, Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. And I'd like to try to take these things in order. But your point that we have the at-risk condition now, the orders make the statement that they do not prejudge PNGTS's rates or at-risk condition. They are in fact doing exactly that, and part of that is by virtue of the nature of the at-risk condition.
Maybe you can explain this to me. Just hypothetically, a pipeline has a capacity of 100, all right? As a result of the actions of third parties or parties in whom the pipeline enters into agreements, the pipeline seeks permission from FERC to reduce that to 75. Now, under the original 100 capacity, the at-risk provision protected your clients from any costs associated with, let's say, that 25 units of capacity. Now your clients don't have to worry about that anymore because we're only talking about 75. Isn't that correct?
It is correct. But what happens, Your Honor, is without the at-risk condition in play, the costs associated with that 25 will be reallocated among the 75.
How do you know that?
Pardon me?
How do you know that?
Because it's a capacity-based at-risk condition.
I know, but can't your clients make all these arguments? We entered into these 20-year contracts with this at-risk protection, and now the pipeline is proposing to shift some of the costs associated with those 25 units against which we were protected onto us in this new rate proceeding. Why can't all that be litigated?
Your Honor, the at-risk condition foreclose any argument that PNGTS's rates should be based on capacity levels higher than those determined by the orders, because that argument will be foreclosed by the contention that would result in the establishment of unlawfully confiscatory rate levels, because it would require rates to be based on levels of capacity the orders determine are no longer physically achievable. So
we don't know how FERC is going to respond if your clients are saying that the 20-year contract that I entered into, based on a capacity of 100, I was protected against that 25, the cost associated with that 25 units. Why can't you make all these arguments and FERC can say that's right? So we're not going to, it wouldn't be a fair and just rate.
I'm not sure, maybe I'm not understanding your hypothetical, Your Honor, but I think taking your hypothetical, we have a capacity-based at-risk condition based on 100 MCF of capacity, and now the capacity has been determined to be 25.
75.
That we would contend that nonetheless rates should be based on that original 100 because they've been held at risk whether they contract the capacity or not. That's, of course, the basis for the at-risk condition, is to protect shippers from the swings in costs resulting from unsubscribed capacity that may become unsubscribed or unutilized. We have that at-risk condition in place. We will make that argument, and PNGTS will counter with, well, no, you can't do that. In fact, they've even made this argument in their brief at page 9 with respect to the original certificate order. But they'll say, no, you can't set rates on capacity higher than is physically achievable for us, because that would set rates on an unlawfully confiscatory rate level. That will set rates at a level that we under due process would not possibly allow us to collect our costs. And we raised that argument with the commission in our brief, and the commission simply didn't respond to it.
You can raise them in the rate proceeding.
And our point, Your Honor, is, but they're foreclosed. We would be foreclosed from raising that in the rate proceeding. And I also make the point that, you know, the rate proceeding is not going to address the statutory basis for the abandonment authorization. And the point I was beginning to make was that an abandonment of interstate service has occurred here. And the commission, according to your precedents, is required to consider the economic effect of that abandonment before it gets to a rate case. Now,
what I don't understand in part about your argument is the commission's order says that on September 24th, 1997, the commission issued certificates to the pipeline authorizing construction and operation. All right, and they were waiting because of the uncertainty about how the pipeline was going to be affected as to what its capacity actually was going to be.
Well, they weren't.
So I don't see where you can argue that the pipeline was operating without authorization during that 8-year period.
This is a point. I think what the FERC is saying and saying that the original order did not establish a certificated level of capacity for PNGTS after its first year, it is sidestepping the fundamental question of authorization. A pipeline is not allowed to engage in interstate transportation or operate facilities for that purpose without certificate authorization. And the statement that PNGTS's certificate order didn't establish a certificated level of capacity for PNGTS after its first year sidesteps the point of whether PNGTS was in fact authorized to operate at 210,000 a day and provide firm, uninterruptible service through it for 8 years. And in real life, there is a delta of 42,000 a day between what the orders establish as the capacity and the 210,000 a day that PNGTS itself reported as its system capacity for 8 years. So the FERC statement simply avoids addressing this question of authorization. And as you point out, if PNGTS wasn't authorized to operate 210, then they were operating in violation of the Natural Gas Act. But if they were, and they've now had that operational authority reduced, that provides a pretty compelling indication that they require abandonment authority to permanently reduce those operational and service capabilities.
Mr. Rudolph?
Yes,
I just want to understand something here, because FERC seems to say that it was perfectly okay for this pipeline to operate without any certificated capacity. If I understand what they're saying, is that they never had it, really. We never said it, and so we can do it now. In fact, I think they refer to this as an initial certification of capacity now, 8 years later, correct? But your argument very vehemently is you can't operate without certified capacity. What statute tells us that?
The Natural Gas Act, Your Honor, and it's Section 7C of the Natural Gas Act, which provides that an interstate pipeline cannot engage in interstate service or operate facilities for that purpose without obtaining certificate authorization. And the point that we're making...
Authorization, but where do we get capacity has to be certified? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Capacity defines the pipeline's public service obligation. That was the original point I was making, that by establishing capacity, you are defining, under FERC regulations, the level of service, interstate service, that the pipeline has to offer to the interstate market. So by reducing capacity, you are effectively reducing the level of service that needs to be offered. And now, instead of offering 210, PNGTS is offering 168,000 a day. It's offering 42,000 decatherms a day of capacity less than it was prior to the issuance of these orders to the interstate market. I'd like to raise one other point. I see my time is, well, in fact, my, I guess my time is, I'd reserve 2 minutes. Maybe I should step back and try to salvage my remaining minute here.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Super.
Good morning. May it please the court. I think the key question here is what Judge Rogers was referring to. There is no injury to the petitioners here as a result of the commission's orders. The petitioners, the shippers on the pipeline, pay a rate. Now, the Section 7 certification does establish an initial rate. That rate is superseded as soon as the pipeline files its first rate case under Section 4 of the NGA, much more thorough process. Here, the rate case was filed back in 2001. The shippers settled with the pipeline. They paid their agreed rate for the entire period up till 2008, when a new rate case was filed. There is no reason that any of the arguments about the rate issues shouldn't be decided in the rate case, as the commission recognized, including the at-risk condition. Mr. Rudolph is assuming, well, we're going to argue this, and the pipeline's going to argue that, but that's probably true, but doesn't say what the commission's going to decide. And until we know what the commission decides on the rate case, we don't know if there's any injury to petitioners.
So I'm clear. In the rate case, could the shippers raise their abandonment argument?
They can. The actual certificated, I always stumble on saying certificated instead of certified, the certificated capacity is decided. But in the rate case, the pipeline can come in and say, here's my certificated capacity, base my rate on it. The rate case has its own regulations. You look at the throughput, and you can look at, the commission looks at the throughput in a test year, and it looks at other factors.
Okay.
And
one of the my hypothetical, where you start out with 100 units of capacity, and now we're down to 75 units of capacity, can the commission set the rates by charging the shippers for the cost of the 25?
The commission can certainly take that into account. And in fact, the petitioners are arguing that there's an ongoing rate case now, and the petitioners are making that very argument before the commission.
So as a practical matter, the shippers would have their opportunity to raise the argument they're raising now. FERC concludes the rate case, and then they challenge the rates in this court.
Absolutely. The at-risk condition and the effect that has on rates, that can be looked at in the Section 4 rate case, is being raised by the petitioners in the ongoing case. If they don't like the outcome of that case, and we don't know what the outcome is going to be, it's still before the administrative law judge, the shippers could certainly bring it to this court's attention. If it happens in a future rate case, is what I really read the petitioners to be talking about. It's completely speculative, but if there's when there's a future rate case, they can raise it in the future rate case. They're not foreclosed from raising those questions of the at-risk conditions, the pipeline's diligence. The certificated capacity has been decided, but not the rate.
I understand that you think that they don't have standing because the harm you think is speculative. They don't really know what's going to happen. But what I don't understand is how we get into this argument in the first place, because if I understand what FERC is saying they are setting the initial capacity. You're saying now this pipeline does have a certificated capacity, right, based on the FERC order that they've just issued.
Right.
But then that means that for 8-plus years they did not have any certificated capacity?
Well, in the original orders, the statute talks about certificating facilities and service, and the facilities and service were certificated. The commission sets a certificated capacity. In this case, it was set for the first year, and the commission said it would wait for the future years to see what would happen, because there was uncertainty about what the capacity was going to be, and we'd look at that in the next rate case. Well, the next rate case, so there was one unresolved issue. The pipeline had a certificate. It was operating under a certificate. There was one unresolved issue. In the rate case that came up in 2001, everybody settled, and nobody brought it to the commission's attention. And then the next 8 years passed. The only injury resulted to petitioners from that. The only injury, if anybody had been injured by the fact that there was an unresolved issue, they would have, the injury would have been that they would have been turned down for firm service, because that establishes the level of firm service that you're, the pipeline is obligated for.
So did this settlement, whatever it was, establish the level at 210,000 decatherms or not?
It did not.
It did not.
But it established the rate.
Okay.
And the only argument here from petitioners is that they might in the future have to pay an unfair rate. The time they're arguing about, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, I understand that they've got a standing problem, and I understand what you're saying about that. But I guess what I'm trying to figure out is there is a statutory provision here that says if service is abandoned, that is, I assume, reduced, right? There are certain things that FERC has to do in looking at that process, okay? And it seems to me that part of their argument is, well, because if FERC doesn't set capacity, which they are always expected to do, then when there is a reduction, there's no way for us to talk about abandonment because that's just gone, right?
Well, the service was originally certificated at 168,000, and then it actually went, the pipeline was actually putting through more in the pipeline. So nobody was getting turned down for firm service. The issue had not been resolved. If anybody had been turned down for firm service, I'm sure they would have said, you know, you better look into this. But the shippers were happy with their rate. They had settled that. And the pipeline didn't abandon any service. It didn't abandon any facilities. It was actually transporting more than it was originally certificated. And the pipeline realized that it was going to have to change that. It came into us and said, look, we have a situation here where you said you were going to certificate the service and at a particular capacity amount for after the first year, and it was never actually addressed. So please address it. And the commission addressed it, looked at the evidence. The evidence, undisputed engineering evidence, supported the pipeline's position that 168 was now proper. To the extent there were any rate issues, the commission said what it often says in these cases, including the cases cited in our brief, Kern River and other cases, unless there's an immediate impact on some kind of economic situation on any parties, we'll deal with the rate impact in the rate case. So it was routine. So the third point is, in the rehearing order, the commission gives us an alternative ground as well. And the commission says that even if this is an abandonment, we have looked at this the way we look at an abandonment. We have the evidence. We have the engineering evidence. There are no services being abandoned. There's no facility being abandoned. We have enough evidence to say, yes, under the public convenience and necessity, which is the standard for Section 7, it meets it. So even if it had come in, if the pipeline had come in and said, we want to abandon, we would have the same result as we do now, and it still wouldn't injure the shippers.
Here, just one thing that I want to make sure I understand. The reason, apparently, that they can go down now is because they had a couple of bankruptcies, and so they had some contracts abrogated in the bankruptcies, right? But they were providing 210,000 decatherms, and they had firm contracts for 20 years. So if that hadn't happened, right, then presumably going down to 168 would be an abandonment, correct?
Yes. And the commission would have dealt with that had that been the situation. But this goes back to Judge Rogers' initial question on the merits. The contracts that for the bankrupt companies were dealt with in a pre – that was covered by a pre-granted abandonment. So there was nothing the commission had to do there. But the main point is that the commission did look at this as an abandonment. The record fully supports it. And be that as it may, we don't have any injury to the petitioners because the shippers here are speculating about what's going to happen in the rate case. If the shippers have a rate they don't like at the end of this rate case or the next rate case, I'm sure they'll bring it to this court's attention. It's just as likely that the pipeline might not lock the rate, and the shippers will be on our side. That certainly happens routinely also. This is just a case that the court does not have to get involved in. There's no injury to the shippers. The rate matters can be determined in the rate case. If there's any problem there, I am sure the shippers will bring it to your attention, and it can be resolved.
Can I ask, how would we characterize the eight-year period at which they were certificated at 168 but were providing 210?
There are certainly cases that we cite in our brief that the certificated capacity is really a floor. It's not a ceiling. All we care about is to make sure there's enough. The commission wants to make sure there's enough firm service. If you're providing more firm service or extra service, that's fine, because we're concerned about there being a plentiful supply of natural gas. And, of course, if anybody, one of the parties, had come in earlier and said, oh, by the way, you didn't resolve this issue because we settled our rate case and it never really went to you except as an uncontested settlement, well, I'm sure we would have addressed it earlier. No further questions. Thank you.
All right. How much time does Mr. Rudolph have? All right, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. Number of points. The injury is to the at-risk condition. The at-risk condition provides an assurance of rate stability outside the context of a rate case by establishing a billing determinant floor that acts as a partial rate ceiling, and shippers rely on that rate stability in making supply and demand forecasts they submit to state regulators in financial planning and budgeting decisions, knowing that they're not going to have to negotiate significantly different transportation alternatives and make potential infrastructure changes necessary to accommodate those simply because their current major transportation path is becoming uneconomic. So the injury is on that assurance. It's not on immediate rate impact. The second point, Mr. Soper mentioned that the original certificate order had established a certificated level of 168. I think he misspoke. It was 178. And somewhere along the line, these orders now establish 168. Somewhere along the line, there's been an abandonment of 10,000 a day of first-year capacity, and yet the original certificate order didn't discuss pre-granting abandonment authority for that clearly certificated 10,000 a day. Third, firm long-term contracts are a commission measure of capacity and the need for abandonment authority, and that is the focus of the Maritimes and Northeast Pipeline case that we cited at I believe it's 80 FERC paragraph 61-136, where the commission said you got to maintain facilities or seek abandonment for capacity that's no longer available, that was under contract but is now no longer available. And then finally, I'd like to make the point that while they say they applied the similar standards of Section 7C, those are, although the same semantical standard, being applied in different contexts. 7C is talking about the initiation of service and the construction of facilities. 7B is talking, at that point, you're asking, is there any reason at all to allow a pipeline to get rid of capacity that it has been using and providing interstate service for? This is this court's precedent in Transco of, is there any reason? Will the abandonment in any way disserve the public interest, the public convenience and necessity? And where precedents find that abandonments will result in higher rate impacts, abandonment authorization is denied. And so before you ever get to the rate case, before you ever get there, the commission has to ask, what is the economic impact of the abandonment? This is one final point, and I realize I'm really pushing it here, but in terms of Judge Rogers, and I can tell Judge Rogers is bothered by this standing question, this is the corollary to the Great Lakes case that we cited to you all, a situation where a pipeline was confronted with an at-risk condition that couldn't possibly impact its rates for 12 years because its capacity was fully contracted for, and yet the court found the pipeline aggrieved because it modified its present, it faced the present burden of having to address what is it going to do 12 years out if its current shipper didn't renew its contract or renew its import authorization. So it is the impact on the at-risk condition that's hitting us.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.